Please listen carefully.
And now, live from an upstairs basement in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two guys still rewinding VHS tapes, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, we continue our Build-A-Crew Head of the High Seas.
Yarr.
We're building a pirate crew.
Oh, it's so fun.
Yeah, it is lots of fun. We have our ship. We have our captain. And now the captain needs to recruit.
That's it.
And the first thing he's going to recruit is his soldier, his bodyguard, his protection even.
His enforcer a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, he needed a little bit of muscle to get the, when you're building the crew, you know, you got to have a little bit of strength at the start.
And when a soldier is on a ship, they're more than a soldier. They're a Marine.
Marines in the Marines. Oh, wait, no, that's in the Navy.
Yeah. There's guys named Marines in the Navy.
I feel kind of bad because I didn't do like that much of a deep dive on like actual Marines for this. I was just more thinking of trying to think of specific people, which was a difficult task. But like Marines started, they were around during pirate times.
Yeah.
But I always forget how long ago they started. It always seems like a new thing, like join the Marines.
No, they were the guys on the ship who shot the rifles at the other ship.
That's it.
And that's basically it. And also they do like landing parties, and if you need any soldiers that spent most of their time on a ship, transported by a ship, came off a ship, lived on a ship, were a Marine.
Yeah, the fighting men on the ships. Not necessarily part of the crew, but would help out.
Yeah, it was really common for just, they were also, like you said, they were also kind of like the security of the ship. They're the ones who would guard the ship when it was in port. They'd be the sentries. They'd also were kind of police-like a little bit on the ship.
Yeah, for sure.
If guys were getting out of hand and needed to be thrown in the brig, it was usually the Marines who were in charge of that.
Yeah, the MPs, the Marine Police.
Yeah, well, sort of.
That's not what it is, I know, but it was funny.
Yeah. So that's kind of what the Marines were, and they've changed to being more of just known as an elite force of a modern military because they are, because they always had to have, like, they weren't just guys who were on land. They had to have that extra sea component. And as such, they, you know, as the ship is, like, moving, they had to be able to aim those unrifled things and still hit stuff. So they got known as elite shots. So then that's carried over to this very day where even every single military of the world, like, their Marine units are considered their elite units, even though they might not even have ships to go on,
but they're trained for them.
Yeah
Because they're elite now, which is the cool factor.
Now, before you begin, because Mikey always goes first because he has this loaded die.
No, I have I have all the pieces of eight.
But before, I want to address the controversy of my captain pick. Because it did get some controversy. How did you say it in the British way?
Controversy.
Controversy. In the laboratory.
Emphasis on the wrong syllable.
The aluminium. But I got a lot of pushback. It's like, hey, why aren't you picking some good? Well, he's like a space captain. What, you know, this is crazy. This is not in the service of what you're trying to do here. I'm going to tell you right now.
Yes.
Go find me six historic Age of Sail Marines who are famous.
That's true. Yeah.
And you're not going to.
No.
I found one. And it wasn't all that impressive to me for me to put him on my list. I don't think you put him on your list either. And I think that this is more of the, for me, this exercise is who would I want to see in this setting?
Yes.
So I literally picked, I picked Captain Malcolm Reynolds from Serenity because I think he would be an awesome pirate captain in the Age of Sail.
And could easily fill that role.
Right. I'm not literally like thinking like, let's take this guy and he's like, what am I doing on this boat? he would be like basically that character in Age of Sail. He would have all the appropriate knowledge of how to work a sailing ship.
Yes.
Instead of a starship. Because, I mean, that's the fun of it, right? That's the fun of what we're doing here.
That's it. I think they're just grumpy because we know you love Captain Malakev. Yes. There's room in your heart for other captains, though. But
well, I've picked other captains in previous ones before. But I think this one's going to get, like, way sillier than that.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because, like, real-life historical Marines are, like you said, it's more of a unit thing. There are historical stories and texts about them that are cool, but like standouts and unique individuals, it's harder to come by.
Yeah, and especially we like to go into like pop culture and mm-hmm. fiction, and there's like not tons of stuff mm-mm. set in the Age of Sail, yeah, except for Master and Commander and like Horatio Hornblower. I pulled that one out.
What a great name still.
Yeah. So, I mean, those things exist.
But that's why we're creative. So yes. We're thinking a little bit outside the box for funsies.
For fun. So have fun with it.
But relax. I have some real serious picks. No, I'm
relax, sit back. Yes.
I am real serious about my opinion.
In 1612.
Beginning with the first Marine, I select him. Joe Q. Marine.
All right. So with that bit of business done, who's your first pick for your pirate ship Marine soldier?
We're starting off with third pick, so this was sort of in consideration, but, you know, bottom rung because he does have some issues. I'll say that right up front. But it's so rad. When I think of Marines, this is something that usually happens. It's the avatar in my brain.
Yes.
I don't know why it's stuck there, but it is.
I think of captains. I have Malcolm Reynolds as an avatar in my brain.
Because you love him. Mm-hmm. You want to marry him.
Okay. Suddenly I'm on the playground in elementary school again.
Yeah. You're going to keep talking about him. I think you have a crush on him. No, my pick for Marine is Colonel Jessup, a.k.a. Jack Nicholson from A Few Good Men.
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth! With the googly eyes. Yeah. I watched that scene probably about 4 times today while I was making my notes and my considerations, because even, like, it's an old movie. A Few Good Men. It's got Tom Cruise in it. It's got Kevin Bacon in it. It's got Demi Moore. Mm-hmm. Everybody. Mm-hmm. And Jack Nicholson is the standout among a bunch of standouts because he is uber Marine guy.
Yes.
He is a colonel in the U.S. Marine Corps. Mm-hmm. When he makes decisions, he saves people's lives. Mm-hmm. You may not like me. I may be grotesque, but you want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. It's so good. And it is so it's good. An 8-minute scene that he just dominates.
Yes.
Because he's fulfilling that role of, oh, that's kind of what the Marines are. Like, love them or hate them, they're the special forces that do dirty jobs and hard work. Mm-hmm. You know, the complexities of the movie is that there are some sort of gray decisions that are judicially, you know, explored.
Yes.
But it does turn out that he is the bad guy. Mm-hmm. He made a call that he thought he was on the right, almost a Thanos decision. It's like, I know it's right. I'm taking this in my own hands.
Very much so.
And turns out, didn't really work out that mm-hmm. way. His perspective was different than everybody else's perspective. So he loses a point for being a bad guy. But you think of him in a more lawless time, the Age of Sail with pirates, you know, when you have that guy who's in his crew that will sort of honor, defend, and good soldiers follow orders mm-hmm. on the lawless sea that could kill you in a wave's notice. You know, that's the kind of Marine you do, like, kind of soldier you do want, running the other soldiers type stuff.
Yeah.
So I couldn't help but think of Jack Nicholson, and, man, he just crushes it.
That's one of the most iconic Hollywood performances of all time.
Yeah.
I think. And that's if you want to point to why Jack Nicholson's great, that's one of the things you can point to. I mean, there's many, many performances, but that one in particular, there's mm-hmm. a reason why people still say you can't handle the truth to this day.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you know the story from it. I've heard this many times.
Please.
That he had that same intensity always, like through the rehearsals and everything.
Oh, wow.
To the point that I don't remember who directed that movie, got concerned that is like, don't save some for when the cameras are on, Jack.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, this is how this character does it. So this is how I do it. And I was like, okay.
That makes sense because he's kind of, I mean, One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, The Shining, like, mm-hmm. he always seems to have that little bit extra. Like,
yeah.
He's cool looking. Jack Nicholson, eyebrows, sunglasses. Yeah. Like, he looks cool. He had the James Dean, like, mm-hmm. persona, but then you put him in some bars and a uniform, mm-hmm. and he starts yelling in a courtroom. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And he did that every take?
Yes, every take.
That's probably why everybody looks a little scared. That's
maybe
everybody
yeah.
else in that scene is like, it's going to happen again. He's going to yell at me.
Yeah. It's so good.
Yeah, it really is. It's funny because you can just go watch that scene in isolation and it works. Like, you don't need the rest of the movie. It's like, oh, what a complete scene.
It's great. Kevin Pollak over there. Kevin Pollock's always a funny.
He's the best.
A funny character actor to me. Not fun. There was an era when he was used in so much stuff mm-hmm. like that. He's with all these great big heavy hitters, but he seems so lovably Kevin Pollak because if you've seen any of his stand up and stuff, he was a stand up comedian.
Well, very smart, you know? very clever.
I just when every time I see him, I'm like, oh, good for you, Kevin Pollak. And the fact that he keeps showing up and stuff just means he must be as good of a guy as he seems because they just like him being around the set, probably.
Yeah.
They're like, hey, we have this kind of role. Get Kevin Pollak in here. He's great.
We need kind of an average dad guy. He's like, oh, yeah, Kevin Pollak. Yeah.
Just him doing Shatner always makes me laugh.
Shatner. We were making fun of Christopher Walken voice, and he does a perfect one.
Have you seen have you ever seen the thing where Kevin Pollak does Shatner, and then Shatner is like, I don't talk like that. Yeah. I don't know why people think this is funny, you know? And
and Kevin Pollak nails it.
Yeah.
He's such a good impersonation.
Oh, my gosh. That's great. Jack Nicholson.
Yeah, so he's a bad guy, but he was in heavy consideration because mm-hmm. he's a force.
All right. My number three pick.
Lay it on me.
The silly pick, because I think, when I think Marines, I do think of historical Marines, and there is one in my list. But what I like to think about is Warhammer 40,000 Space Marines, because they are indeed Marines.
Yes.
And my favorite chapter of the Space Marines is the one that I always played on the tabletop, the Space Wolves.
Ow.
And the most famous Space Wolf is one who has been in a series of books called the Space Wolf novel series. And that is Ragnar Blackmane, also known as the Black Wolf, the youngest wolf lord in the history of the Space Wolves, commanding the Blackmane's great company.
I love it. And I can tell that's already fits for a pirate because it sounds like a Viking name.
Yeah.
It's a space wolf name, but
Ragnar Blackmane. when I was revisiting this, the lore, because I've read these books, it's been a minute, but I was revisiting the lore of the books and Warhammer 40,000 is so good with the lore. And I started going like, oh, do they have like the cojones to like not do the story of the regular blue ultramarines, the vanilla marines that are like the banners, if they are going to do like movies and stuff,
mm-hmm.
will they adapt this series
of
the Space Wolves? Because the Space Wolves is so much fun because they're not standard Space Marines. They are all steeped in this Nordic / werewolf lore.
I love it.
And that everything is it's very very Viking like. Everyone has Viking names.
Are they bad guys or just wild guys?
Just wild guys. Who's a good guy? Who's a bad guy in Warhammer 40,000? But technically, yes, they are part of the Imperium. They are one of the original chapters founded by Layman Russ, who was one of the original Space Marines created by the Emperor back when he was alive.
Blood for the Blood God. Oh, wait, no.
No, that's actually, those were the bad guys. but he's probably one of the most fleshed out of the Space Marines because of this whole series of books. Thing about Space Wolves is they come from this planet called Fenris, and there's these like barbarian tribes that live on this world, and it's like a wild world, and everyone's kind of like Viking-like, and they're all these tribes that fight within each other, and there's the Space Wolves are high on this monastery mountain looking down upon them, and they pull like the greatest warriors of these tribes and turn them into Space Marines.
Nice. So they're like the head tribe.
So kind of the tribes are actually kind of very primitive.
I gotcha.
And they don't, the Space Wolves as a chapter don't really contact them that much.
Okay.
So when they do show up, they're still kind of they're kind of like, oh, those are the big scary armor monster people.
Yeah, because the Space Wolves are still like armored up and weaponized. And, yeah.
But anyway, Ragnar's real name is Ragnar Thunderfist because he's part of the Thunderfist tribe.
Pa-pow!
And they are attacked at one point by the rival tribe, the Grimskull tribe. And they slaughter everyone in his family, everyone in his tribe except for him. He's young. He's a teenager.
Yeah.
But he manages to fight back and kill almost everyone in the Grimskulls as well. And he's like, there's one Grimskull left and him left. And they fight and they mortally wound each other.
Okay.
And they're lying there dead, almost dying. And that's when one of the Space Wolves shows up. And he's like, these two will do well.
Nice.
So
that was the audition process.
You have this really cool, the first book is about him becoming a Space Wolf, and then he's literally having to train beside this other guy who they tried to kill each other.
Mm-hmm.
And this other guy killed members of his family.
Oh no.
So there's that conflict there.
Of course.
Interesting. And it ends up, you know, spoiler alert to this book, if you should read it, but it ends up that they get into a lot of battles and end up having to like help each other and save each other and find respect for each other in the end.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Even though he was his enemy.
Bonded through battle and yeah.
But the whole point is that Ragnar ends up becoming like the youngest like leader of the wolf chapter. Because he's so awesome, yeah. He jumps straight from, so the Space Wolves have like, one of the things that's cool about them, one of the things that's different, is they literally have a squads of teenagers called the Blood Claws, and they're literally just
blood for the Blood Claws.
They're just crazy teenagers, and they're really good at close combat.
Nice.
And there's a lot of them, and they fight hand to hand, and they're insane and berserk.
Love it.
And Ragnar was the best of them, and bested people he shouldn't have bested because he was so awesome, and that led to renowned. And usually the Blood Claws go, when they get old enough, they go into the Grey Hunters, and the Grey Hunters are more like a regular Space Marines with the big guns and
like the minor league though.
They're Grey Hunters are like the veterans. They travel around.
Gotcha.
And then above the Grey Hunters is like the Wolf Guard. Those are like the veterans. Those are the guys who are around the guy who runs the chapter. There's different chapters.
That's awesome. I do love the branding and the theming, like Fenris and the
But that. What's cool, his whole deal is that he was so awesome that he skipped over the Grey Hunter stage and went straight to the Wolf Guard.
It's almost like the animalistic tribal version of Ender's Game.
Yeah.
Or that like trope, you know, like, oh, little kid's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he skipped right over, and then he was part of the Wolf Guard of Lord Beric Thunderfist.
Kaka!
His great company. And what happens is there's this big battle, and Beric Thunderfist gets killed by like a chaos champion.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ragnar avenges him and takes down this chaos champion, and therefore takes on the mantle of the.
He's the new ruler.
Yeah, he's the new ruler. So.
Or the new captain.
Yeah. So he's like the youngest that's ever been.
There you go.
And he keeps showing up. He has tons of adventures. There's like six books. And then they made him show up. They had this great big recent arc with this crazy like avatar of the orc gods.
I love it.
His name is
Orky McOrc Face.
Gazcall Thraka.
That is definitely an orc name.
Yes.
Gaz, no, that's him coughing.
And there's a whole, he ends up fighting him, and that's how they, Warhammer did this thing that I'm not the biggest fan of.
Which is
they basically said, oh, they brought like one of the original Primarchs back. That's one of the original people that the Emperor created. And he's like, I can upgrade all the Marines to better Marines.
Because powers.
Which means you have to buy all new models because now they're bigger. Which is dumb.
But that's nerd but media 101. I know,
but then it's like, and now you need a bigger Ragnar Blackmane model, so we're going to have him get mortally wounded by Grazgul Thraka.
Oh, no.
And then have this process done to him. So now he's a bigger Primaris Marine.
AKA has a new model that you can buy now for $19.95.
Yes, it's much bigger than the old model. Anyway, but Ragnar Blackmane was always in my... I ran his great company when I played. Yeah, I have his model.
Hell yeah.
And his two wolves he has with him.
Oh, yes. Are they familiars? Like, can they communicate?
Fangir and Ulfgir, who are his... They're just giant wolves.
Wonderful.
That are side by side with him.
Because wolves.
Because...
You don't even need reasons.
Fenrisian wolves, they have giant wolves. His name is Blackmane, too, because part of their initiation is they're sent out into the wilderness.
Okay, yeah, of course.
And they have to see if they can survive.
Mm-hmm.
And the greatest thing is to kill a wolf and come back with his pelt. And so he came back with a black maned wolf pelt.
I love it.
Yes.
So do they pull any of like the Roman stuff, like the Remus Romulus raised by wolves? Like, does that blend into any of the Warhammer mythology, or is it
but not with these guys? These are the Viking guys.
Okay, gotcha.
There
okay.
are other chapters of Space Marines that pull from all.
I love it.
There's a whole chapter of Space Marine that is just like set up like the Roman legions.
I love it.
You can find those over there.
Okay,
you know, there's one that focuses all. If you like motorcycles, there's like the White Scars are all motorcycle based. They're a motorcycle gang.
I got you.
Version of Space Marines. They all have their own little thing.
Fair enough. I was just wondering because that like the founding of Rome does have like wolf lore.
It does.
To it.
Yeah.
I was just wondering.
No, these are just these are the Viking ones.
I love it. No, it's great. I've been playing Rogue Trader, Warhammer Rogue Trader, so yeah. I'm learning and enjoying everything.
Yeah, they all have their ones. So Ragnar Blackmane, he's a Marine. He's a Space Marine.
Was he good to
his
men?
The best. Yeah, well, he's the best. He's very inspiring to everyone. They are always... I always liked playing the Blackmane Company because the Blackmane Company was the spearhead company. They're always the ones that went in first
mm-hmm.
and left last.
Gotcha.
So, because there's like 12 great companies.
First ones in, last ones out.
First ones in, last ones out. That Love was his it. Whole deal because they said that he still had the blood claw mentality, which is this crazy berserk teenage mentality of like,
berserkery.
Let's go get them and fight with our hands.
That's why we love Wolverine.
The Blood Claws were always fun to run in the game because usually a Space Marine unit is like just five guys.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
But Blood Claws, there's 10 of them.
Nice.
And they aren't as skilled, but there's lots of them.
So lower accuracy, but higher strength a little bit.
Yeah, there's just tons of them.
I love
so it's
it.
Fun because and their main thing is like fighting orcs, so it's super fun because orcs have tons too.
I love
so
it.
You just because usually you know you got five guys and like you're fighting 15 orcs and yeah they can get through because they're so skilled and they're Space Marines and they're these super soldiers
dun, dun, dun.
But it's much more fun to run in there with 10 insane crazed bloodlusting teenagers.
Blood for the Blood Claws.
Yeah.
No, it's mob fighting. I love it.
Yeah.
That's way more engaging for the table gaming.
Yes.
And I'm making you ramble about Warhammer because my second pick is going to be quick and dirty. But no, I've been enjoying the crap out of Warhammer. And yeah. I got to remind myself, and this justifies it, it's an excellent pirate pick because I remind myself that Warhammer is grimdark, which is a specific lane of fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost the foundation of it in a lot of ways. And it's so fun for that.
And I don't know why when we're talking about Henry Cavill doing Warhammer 40,000, what's he going to do? And you said, are there any things? And I kind of talked about Isengard and the Inquisitor and stuff, but I totally forgot that there's this whole series of Space Wolf things.
Yeah, yeah. Viking to Witcher, that's an easy costume change.
Yeah, I think that. Anyway.
I love it. We got to see him be Ungentlemanly Warfare first in that Guy Ritchie movie, but then we'll get to Henry Cavill.
Mm-hmm.
But my second pick, this is a fun default, but the more I thought about it, the more I wanted to talk about it. So, for my Marine, it is not an Age of Sail Marine, but it is the Marine, capital T, capital M, the Marine, and that is John Cena
John Cena.
He was in a movie called The Marine.
Oh, yeah.
It came out in 2006.
I don't think I saw that.
You probably didn't. Probably shouldn't. Just kidding. You should. It is an action movie of the highest order, mm-hmm. which means it is almost terrible.
Almost terrible.
But because of the action scenes and because John Cena is so winning.
Yeah.
And the bad guy that I'll tell you about in a second is awesome, that it makes for a fun time, if not for the best made movie.
Oh.
But it's early John Cena. This is 2006, so he's coming up.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Yep. This is a movie made by the WWE.
Oh!
So it's kind of like the SNL Wayne's World sort of metaverse happening.
Oh.
WWE said, we're making action movies, and here's our star, WWE star John Cena.
How many WWE movies are there?
There's a bunch.
Really?
Yes. And
High Talk?
No, I did the same thing, because The Marine, I've seen The Marine, but there's six of them now. They've gone up to The Marine 6.
Oh.
But
all with John Cena?
No. I bring this up because we talked about this on the last podcast. The first one has John Cena. 2 through 6 are not John Cena.
Oh.
They are stars of the WWE, so sort of like a platform to put them up.
Oh, I see.
But John Cena was in the first one and was like, I want nothing to do with the rest of them.
Okay.
Like we were joking about in our nerd alerts. But it is a great time because it's John Cena versus Robert Patrick, T-1000. He's not quite as young as he was in T2, but he's just as badass.
Damn.
And he's a gang leader. He's just bad guy, wears nice clothes, but will kill anybody that's trying to get in his way. John Cena and his wife are on a road trip to get away from his hardcore life of being such an awesome Marine, you know. They stop at a gas station. The gang stops at the gas station. Chaos ensues, and the gang kidnaps his wife and blows everything up and kills everything up. Kills everybody except for John Cena.
I like kills everything up. That's good.
Kills everything up.
Let's make that canon to something.
Yes, except for John Cena, but I should actually call him by his proper name in this movie, John Triton.
It is so funny. How often do they do that where they just change their last name?
Yeah.
It's so weird. They do it all the time.
It's like, it probably saves so much stress, though, but yes.
But like, all the way back to Tony Danza in Who's the Boss? His name is like Tony Maselli or something like that.
What's it?
There's so many things like that. It's so funny.
They keep trying to address Tony Danza as another character name, and they couldn't get him. And they were like, Tony. He's like, huh? What? Angela?
Angela, Samantha, Jonathan.
Sorry.
No, that is the thing. It's easy peasy. Keep the first name. Give him a close last name.
His name's John Bina.
John Bina the Marina. That would have been too easy. No. So it's John Triton. Okay. Triton. The Marine. He is a super soldier. He is everything you would hope they would write the action hero based on WWE star John Cena to be. He's throwing bad guys around. He's surviving explosions. He's jumping out of cars.
Is he rapping?
Not yet, because this is early John Cena. So it's kind of fun to see because he's a terrible actor because he's he hasn't started yet. No, it's true. Nobody knows that. Is he here? I can't see him. I don't know if he's in the room with us, so I got to be careful. But it's true.
Oh,
like, this is him fresh out of the waters, trying to make a start as actor.
Hey, man, Chuck Norris made an entire career out of being a terrible actor.
But the great action hero.
Yeah,
which is what he does.
Action hero. Yep.
We've now come to find out, and this is the reason he's my second pick, John Cena's rad. He's got comedic timing.
Yeah.
He loves a bit. You know, he doesn't mind being the goofball, dumb guy, fall guy.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's making Peacemaker with Robert Patrick again. Mm-hmm. They teamed up. Like, when I was watching Peacemaker, which is rad, by the way, James Gunn doing the boy-style send-up of crazy superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
It's Robert Patrick and John Cena again. I was like, why is this so fun? Why is this so familiar? And it's because I have a deep love for The Marine, where it happened. but it's the walking tall story. So
yeah, when you started saying it, I was like, I think I've seen this movie. Oh, wait, no, that was Walking Tall with a rock.
Yeah, Death Wish with Charles Bronson, a little bit modified. You know, it's an action movie trope we've seen hundreds of times before. But with John Cena just laying terrible one-liners and awesome action moves just to get his wife back. Before John Wick did it, before Jack Ryan and Jack Reacher, John Ryan, John Reacher,
John
Ryan,
John.
All of them. Yeah. I know they were books first, but the Marine, John Cena, was actually first in the movie format, and it's rad. Terrible, but rad.
Sounds like we might need to do a reassumption / assumption of that.
Yeah, yeah. And he's,
no,
and
you gave it up what you are. Maybe I should just watch it and tell you later.
We can. It could just be a watch along, but... as far as Marine, I sort of glossed over it, but they give him the full backstory in the movie. Like, he is elite tier in among the Marines, you know, so he justifies it. They show him go on missions and pulling off moves, but it would be so fun to see him, like, now funny, aware of the bit John Cena in a pirate costume.
Oh, yeah.
Like, trying to be the big lug muscle guy, but maybe kind of messing it up. I don't know. Dropping cannonballs or something. You see? But there is one person that beats him out, which is why he's second pick. But he was up there. Go watch The Marine.
Okay.
And I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. I do want to watch it now, and I'll tell you if you need to apologize again.
If we watch the first one, that kind of means we may have to watch six of them. So I don't know if we want to open that can of worms.
Yeah, I don't know. My number two pick is a real life Marine and one who people might know from a HBO series. Some people might know it from a PBS documentary or the book he wrote. But I chose E.B. Sledge, also known as Sledgehammer, who was a United States Marine during the Second World War, who probably wrote the most thorough memoir of fighting in the Pacific during World War II, because he took notes secretly in his Bible that he little pocket Bible he carried with him. You weren't allowed to take notes because they didn't want any intelligence getting out there. So you weren't allowed to have a notebook or anything, but you were allowed to have a Bible. And in the margins of the Bible, he wrote down everything that was going on.
Those are tiny margins in a pocket Bible.
Yeah.
Impressive.
And as soon as he got back, he filled it out, and then he let it sit for like almost 30 years before he wrote With the Old Breed at Peleliu in Okinawa. And it was chronicled his experiences in World War II. It came out in 1981. That's how long he waited to write it. And then it was used as source material for Ken Burns' PBS documentary, The War, which is excellent.
Of course, it's Ken Burns.
As well as source material for the HBO miniseries The Pacific.
Yeah.
And E.B. Sledge is in that and is portrayed by Joe Mazzello, I think he was in Jurassic Park.
He was a little kid in Jurassic Park.
He was a little kid.
He was in Star Kid.
Yeah. And
he was in Social Network. He was in the new Queen movie.
Yeah.
What's up, Joe?
Very good actor. Looks a lot like E.B. Sledge as well. And he did a great job in this. The Pacific isn't talked about as much as Band of Brothers. I think for the same reason the Pacific War isn't talked about as much as the European War.
I can see that.
It was brutal and gross and painful. And I think that the miniseries did such a good job of showing that, how horrible it was, that I think a lot of people saw it and were like, ugh.
Yeah, yeah.
But mission accomplished. The European War was much more, you know, it was kind of two Western powers against each other, and they had a similar mentality. And even though war's brutal for sure, it's weird to say it was cleaner.
Yeah.
But the Germans knew when they were licked and they would give up. The Japanese didn't. And he made a point of mentioning that in his book. And they make a point of showing all of it in that series.
Yeah, so props to that series. I mean,
it's heavy.
Yeah, but what you're saying is all true. It is the uglier of the war, so therefore the uglier of the series. But it's just as well crafted as Band of Brothers.
Mm-hmm. It is. But I just think it's a great character. When I think of a Marine, a World War II Marine, I think of him mainly because he was such an intelligent guy. He actually came up with a lot of wealth, and he could have easily gotten out of going to the war because he had a heart murmur when he was a kid, and his dad was a physician, and they could have easily, and his dad was like, I just write you a thing saying that you, and he was like, no, I'm going to go fight in this war. And his dad initially sent him off to school to go to officer training, and he's like, I'm going to miss the war. So he like dropped out of school, signed up, went into the Marines.
That's crazy.
And like he, like his family was wealthy. They're from Alabama. I mean, they had like, you know, a cook and a gardener and a maid, like all this kind of stuff.
Fair enough.
But he never lorded that over anybody. People were surprised when they found out that was his background.
Mm-hmm.
And just that intelligence, I guess, is why he kept notes and chronicled everything. And he was horrified about what he saw, and he wanted people to know. He really, he went and saw after the war with his wife, whom I don't know if they were married at the time, but he went, he saw South Pacific on Broadway.
Okay.
And he was like, I don't want people to think that's what the South Pacific was like in World War II.
I could see that.
So
yeah.
I'm going to have to write down all this stuff.
Yeah. Cause that was the, that was how they painted over it with those like South Pacific and media like that. It was just like the other war stories you've heard about. It was just as fine and clean.
Yeah. Nope. The Americans did horrible things and the Japanese did horrible things.
Yep.
Everything was just generally horrible. But I mean, if you want, I don't really need to tell all these horror stories, read the book or watch the series, really.
Mm-hmm.
Both. I've done both. It's worth it to do both.
So you've read the book that he did all his
notes?
I've
read his book.
Okay.
I've read his book. I've also read the other book that it was based on, Helmet for My Pillow.
Okay.
Which is one of the other characters in the, because there's two main protagonists in the show. And those are based on two books.
Got it. Okay.
There's technically three main protagonists. One of them didn't have a book. One of them is based on a guy who won the Medal of Honor, I think. Either way. But what's really interesting to me about this guy is what happened after the war. And his, he turned all of that, what we would call PTSD now, that they didn't know what at the time was, to take his mind off it, he just turned towards academia. And this guy ended up getting a doctorate and becoming a biologist.
Hell yeah.
And he couldn't hunt anymore because he couldn't bear to kill anything. So he became a bird watcher and pioneered a lot of things. And what is that called?
Ornithology.
Yeah.
Ornithology.
But he just, and he, then he worked at doing a lot of research, biological research, research with parasitic worms, and then ended up becoming a professor.
That's awesome.
And he was a beloved professor when, when the, like I said, the book didn't come out until way like 81. A lot of his students were like shocked to find out, like read the book and shocked to find out what went on, because he was such a kind, gentle soul. And he said a lot of it just came from the fact that he had seen the most horrible stuff anyone could see. So every day not in that was a gift. So that's why he was such a kind, gentle guy.
And
I think it's just, I just wanted to talk about him.
That, no, that's, that, he sounds like an amazing and rad dude in equal measure, a gentleman and a scholar.
Yeah.
But like, it's, I mean, it, not in a glib sense, but it is endearing when media is informed that way. Like the Pacific, if you want, it's an HBO show. Like you're going to get HBO level production and enjoy yourself. But the fact that it's based on this book and has this historical context, and the book was written, created in such a means of like, hey, I want this to be out there.
Yeah.
This has to exist, this story and this perspective. That's just, I mean, the same thing is true of Gene Roddenberry in Star Trek. It's an easy comparison.
Yeah, yeah.
It like he created media as his response of time in the war.
Yeah.
And it's always so fascinating to learn which media comes out like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it just adds so much level and complexity to it. Well, you're like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's true. If he hadn't written this book, then a big piece would be missing from the Pacific and Ken Burns' documentary.
Exactly.
The War.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think, I mean, he would be great to have on a ship because he gets the job done.
Yeah.
And he was known as, one of his sergeants said that, they're like, what did you think about him? And he's like, I didn't think much about him because I knew he would do whatever I told him to.
I got you.
And he's like, that's what you want. He goes, you think about the guys who aren't.
That's it. Yeah.
as a squad leader, you think about the guys who aren't. Like, oh, this guy's going to get me in trouble. This guy's going to get us killed.
Yeah.
But the guys who do what they're supposed to do, you don't worry about
it. That's it.
I love the Greatest Generation and those kind of compliments they have.
Oh, for sure.
Like, what do you think about him? I don't. And, you know, it sounds like an insult, but then when he goes on to explain it,
it's like, it's oh, like the most sincere thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because, yeah, you're asking, like, what are your worries about that guy? And you're like, oh, I have no worries about that guy.
Yeah.
It's that, but just different language.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
My recommendation is to go watch The Pacific. It's heavy, but I think it's important to know.
I agree.
Yeah.
That's an excellent second
and
pick.
And it's got great people in it. His best friend is a guy named Snafu, they called him Snafu, who is this Cage of New Orleans and played by Rami Malek in it. And seeing the two of them play off each other, it's great.
That's why you see them again in the Bohemian Rhapsody movie together. Yeah. It's fun to see them interact. They have good chemistry.
Yeah, they do.
When you have Sledge on your ship, is he going to retain the name Sledgehammer? And two, are you going to allow him to keep a journal?
Yeah, he can keep a journal. But also, did they have sledgehammers back in times?
You got cannons and cannonballs and forgeries and stuff.
I mean, I'm sure they had big giant hammers, but I don't know if they were called sledgehammers.
I would imagine Sledge is an old word. That seems like
it was his last name, so I'm sure people had the last name Sledge.
So therefore, I would put.
But
money
it makes me wonder if some guy named Sledge invented a giant hammer, and that's why it's called a sledgehammer.
Nope, it's probably some bastardization of language.
Yeah,
like Sledgehammer from German.
Yeah.
Take out some letters. It's the sledgehammer. Mm.
There's somebody who knows who's yelling at their iPod right now.
Peter Frampton.
I still say iPod like someone uses an iPod.
Yeah,
so.
It's Peter Frampton. He's yelling at his iPod. He's saying sledgehammer, right?
No, that was Peter Gabriel.
Oh, crap.
Is that what you're talking about? Sledgehammer.
See, there goes that joke. Oh, yeah. It would have been so good. Sorry, guys. I'm dumb sometimes. Peter Frampton. That's Mitch Hedberg's fault. Anyway, there's enough polls for you. We got to get to our final picks.
Oh, we have fun here. I hope you guys do.
We
too.
Do. Shout out to Evie Sledge, though. And shout out to Joe Mazzello.
Yeah. It's a great book, too.
Is it a weird question, but is it an easy read despite its content matter?
It is because he is so academic.
Ah,
it's
okay.
It's very well written.
So there's not much flourish or fanciful to it.
So I mean, I guess it is kind of fanciful because it's written novellic, is what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
Because he's so academic.
Gotcha. Okay. I'll add it to the pile.
A Helmet to My Pillow is really good too because I can't remember his name, that character, and well, he's not a character, a real person. I can't remember his name off the top of my head. Lecky, something like that. But he ended up becoming a reporter after the war. So
okay.
That's really well written, too.
There you go.
Yeah.
Classy guys. That's awesome.
That means we're time for Mikey's number one pick. Who will Mikey have on his ship?
Who are we actually picking for our Marine that's on board our... Yours is still the Ironside. So far.
And you know, the one historic Marine I found was a Marine who is from that era and served in the same battles. So technically, I couldn't even pick him because
I was
going to
disqualify him. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not allowed to pick from the same media.
Can't have two things. It's in the rules.
Because he was in the Battle of Tripoli and all that. So that same thing. He was a War of 1812 guy.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
But disqualified.
Mm hmm. That's why I can't even tell you what his name is. I didn't research him any further. I went, War of 1812. I took a War of 1812 ship. That's out.
Okay, so I'll get my shenanigans out of the way. My first pick is not a Marine. He is called a Specialist.
Oh.
And he's not a pirate because he's in space.
Oh.
But a lot of the same arguments we made for Captain Mal apply in this sense. But I am picking Jason Momoa, also known as Ronan Dex in Stargate Atlantis.
Oh.
So it's got water in the title. That's another loophole. That's a more loose justification in Mikey world. But Stargate Atlantis is a continuation of the wonderful Stargate series that started with Kurt Russell in the movie in the ancient 90s.
Uh-huh.
And then we had Stargate SG-1.
Yeah, I used to watch that.
And then
Richard Dean Anderson.
Exactly.
MacGyver's in that.
And it went for 7 seasons.
Yeah.
And with creative intent, they sort of did a send-off, like transition mantle passing to Stargate Atlantis. And they sort of picked it up and it became its own thing for 5 seasons.
Oh.
So it's a continuation of SG-1 in TV series form.
Oh, I never even saw it. Jason Momoa was in that?
It was.
Is that his first thing?
Baby Momoa.
Oh.
So what's funny is he in the show, he plays the barbarian they sort of pick up along the way.
Mm.
Later on in the series, they also call him the Chewbacca of the crew.
Oh.
They call him Chewie, so he gets a little bonus points for that. But he is big and imposing. But looking at him now, you're like, he looks so tiny. Like, oh, look, it's baby Momoa. Oh, look how cute he looks. Look at that baby face. Because he's huge now, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's Aquaman.
Yeah.
And also, I got Aquaman on my ship, and nobody can say anything about it. But in Stargate Atlantis, he is still imposing. But he plays, his planet is Setida.
Uh-huh.
But essentially, it's like, it's a synonymous to our space wolves, our animalistic tribal Viking people that exist out in space. Oh. It's sort of that type of warrior race. He looks a little bit like a Klingon, if you had to do the visual comparison. He's got dreadlocks and sort of the animal cloth.
Is he on a ship, on a boat?
He is sort of on the run. He is actually called a runner because the bad guys in Stargate Atlantis are called the Wraith. If you've seen Firefly and Serenity, it's the Ravagers with a different name.
Okay.
It's the animalistic, cannibalistic force that just wants to destroy all life. But they tag things that they capture and set them free so they can hunt them, like in the most dangerous game style. And so that's what Jason Momoa is in this series. Ronan is on the run, and so that fits him into the pirate life. Because he's used to being hunted. Pirates are used to being hunted.
Uh-huh.
But he's also used to evading capture and sort of adapting to whatever world he happens to find him in. Because Stargate, for people unaware, you know, it's traveling worlds. It's going through portals and coming into unknown environments and unknown situations. So that adds to him being more than apt to serve on a pirate ship.
Okay. But there's no ships in what he does.
The Stargate has, the Stargate crew takes them on to their spaceship.
Okay.
Yes. So he does serve on a spaceship.
I'm just hearing Scott yelling really loud right now.
No, he does. He
doesn't like this at all.
He serves on a ship. Served on a crew.
I got it.
And he was part of the military on his planet of Setida.
I see. Okay.
They're like Spartans, warrior race, you know, men are raised to be part of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's real good. He's next level good. Like because the planet is so warrior like when he goes to a non-warrior like planet, it's like, oh, like I'm surrounded by tiny feeble people.
Mm-hmm.
That's Ronan Dex in this. So he's got the strength and the muscle. But he's technically called a specialist, but it is the elite soldiers that do extra missions for this military force.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially the Marines for a different planet.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Scott's not going to like it one bit.
No, but he's a specialist.
I'm calling you out on Scott's behalf.
I love it.
I will allow it. Scott will not like it one bit. He's not here today to yell at you, but he'd be yelling at you right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell him that. You know what he would say?
Hey, listen.
Yeah.
Listen. We're on waters. We're not in space.
Yeah.
I get it. He's not wrong.
Mm-hmm.
He is a space specialist.
Wait till you hear my first pick, Scott.
But here's how I'll appease those that are grumpy about it.
Please do, because you're going to have to appease them after mine, too.
For being an alien, there really is no supernatural element to him that I'm bringing. Like, he is supremely talented and supremely strong.
Yeah.
But it's not like Superman level. He's not flying or anything. But he's really good with any weapon you hand him. Harpoon, whatever, cannon. He picks up stuff really well. One of my favorite beats in the show is because it's like SG-1 and you have the commander who's very like Joe American, you know, like, oh, I'm out in space, but man, I really missed my apple pie. Like that kind of attitude.
Joe American.
Yeah.
He's Canadian, but whatever. Richard Dean Anderson. I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's just funny to me how there's all these Joe American. you know, like Jim Carrey, a great American comic. Wait, what?
Fine, he's Joe Toronto. I can't say Joe Quebec because that's not. It would be he would be super French.
Yes.
But no, like so, the captain in this is very much the similar type of character. It's not Joseph Dean Anderson, but he introduces Ronan Dex Momoa to golf. You know, the American traditional sport. And Momoa,
the American traditional sport.
Yeah. And, you know, he's explaining, oh, there's complexities, there's swing, there's physics. And then, you know, Momoa picks it up. He's like, oh, and then whacks it and, like, crushes it. And he's like, well, and then so the commander's like, well, it's actually about accuracy and stuff. And he's like, oh, you mean like this? And does it, like, three more times. Like, he's like, this is a puny sport. I learned it in 30 seconds. Let's go do something else. It's the best. But it sums up, like, that's him, Marine. He's no nonsense. He's got a real dry sense of humor, but also can kill you and get the job done if you ask him politely.
Yes.
Yeah, so Ronan Dex will look good on the Black Pearl, I think.
Yes.
He's already got the outfit. Dreadlocks, like animal skins, space guns.
Yeah.
But no space guns. We'll be time appropriate.
Right, we'll be time appropriate, which is what I'm going to have to do for my guy, too, because my guy is also from space.
I love it.
He's another space marine, but not a warmer 40,000 space marine. To me, he's the quintessential space marine. It's Corporal Dwayne Hicks.
Oh, of course.
From Aliens.
I'm going to defend you already. When you Google like fantasy fictional marines, you get space marines all day long.
Right.
That's all you see.
That's all you see. And I would argue that it doesn't matter what era you put Dwayne Hicks in. He's the ultimate marine.
Yeah, man.
He's... not, man, part of this is going to be my rant on You Did My Boy Dirty, along with Newt and Aliens 3.
Yes.
That we try and be positrons about stuff, but here's listen to me, positrons, and hear me well. Sometimes there are things that should not have happened.
This should not be.
There's some things that were just wrong from the beginning and kept being wrong. When the director of the movie doesn't want to acknowledge that he had any part in it.
Yes.
And he's one of the most famous directors.
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong with it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to sit there and try and like positron it up.
Something got janky in the works for sure.
Something got really janky as the many rewrites and re-things and just, I don't know. So, but we're not talking about that one. We're talking about the one before it because I pretend Aliens 3 doesn't exist.
Fair enough. So does David Fincher.
Yeah.
Yeah,
me
yeah.
and David Fincher will get along very well.
Written by Joss Whedon, if I'm remembering my trivia correctly, but I'll have to double check that.
I'm not 100% sure that I think he might have a draft in there.
I think, but his name is weirdly in that conversation.
Yeah, it got rewritten and messed with so much.
It's a weird one, yeah.
It's very, it was a disaster in more ways than one.
But we're not here to talk about that.
No, we're talking about Dwayne Hicks. If you haven't seen Aliens, what's wrong with you? It's one of the greatest science fiction movies ever made and also on the list of a sequel that's good.
Absolutely. The exception that proves the rule.
Yeah. We always talk about how Alien and Aliens, these movies were from the turn of the 80s and how they did, like, everyone talks about strong female character, Mary Sue, blah, 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 blah. And you sit there and you go, look at Ellen Ripley. That was just a character that wasn't supposed to be, you know, it wasn't made to be strong female character.
It wasn't even written female at first.
No, it was written gender neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Ellen Ripley is one of the greatest characters ever. And I think that they needed a kind of a partner to her in a way that could equal her without, like, mansplaining her. I don't know exactly what to say it.
But no, for such a powerful character, you do need a contrast to that and something for that to work against.
Yes.
Work up with. Yeah.
So I think Dwayne Hicks is a perfect contrast because in the first, like, his arc is very similar to her arc in the first movie because she's there with the crew and everything starts going to crap and she ends up having to take the lead. And even though you just it's like I'm not really put here to be the commander, but now I'm taking charge.
Oh, it's duty thrust upon the unwilling. Right. It's the best.
And it's the same thing here with Dwayne Hicks because he's just a corporal. He's got lieutenants above him. He's got all kinds of people above him. Mm-hmm. But as everything goes to heck and the aliens start showing up and people start dying,
yep.
it gets to a point where it's like, I'm the highest ranking person here now as a corporal. And for those of you who don't know military stuff, corporal's like the second rank up from beginning.
It does sound fancy, though. It's got three syllables.
But. It does sound fancy, but it's below a sergeant and above a private, and that's it. And there's nothing below a private. So literally, he's like...
Correction, my feet are below... Never mind.
But he and Ripley make this awesome dynamic duo, I think.
For sure.
And they bounce ideas off each other. So one of the things I love about this movie is he's not just sitting there going, we're going to do this. And she's not just sitting there going, I know everything about these things. We're going to do this. They literally sit there and they kind of discuss. Mm-hmm. And they're, you know, they're literally like, let's, we're just going to have to nuke the place. Yeah, I agree with you. We're just going to have to nuke the place. But he's so noble. He's so Johnny on the spot in the way that like, oh, this is what needs to happen now. We're going to do it. I'm stepping up. I'm taking my duty. When he loses teammates, you can see he feels it, but he's like, I got to keep moving on. I can keep going. I'm going to save who I can. I'm going to save this kid. I'm going to save this. I guess she was like a scientist at that point. I don't know really what Ripley was supposed to be because she was just like a
part. No, yeah, she's the passenger scientist.
Yeah. Yep.
Along with the other crew.
She's an inadvertent expert in these creatures.
Xenomorphs.
Because she's one of the only people who survived them. And together they make this dynamic duo, as I said, and then they just like get rid of it in Aliens 3, which is because he's like one of the only, him, Newt, Bishop, and Ripley are the only ones who survive.
Yeah.
Spoilers. An old movie. But I've seen Michael Biehn, who plays him, he gave an interview. Someone asked him about Aliens 3 and like, they did you dirty, dude. And he's like, yeah. He goes, I think they did. He goes, I don't see why. Sigourney and I were building something there.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I thought Alien 3 would have been like almost like a buddy movie with the two of us.
Oh, that would have been rad.
He goes, we were trying very hard not to fall into the trap of making this romantic, but at the same time, give you the feeling that we like really started caring about each other.
For sure.
He goes, it would have been really fun to explore in a third movie where it's like, he goes, it would have been compelling to him. And I mean, this is, you're talking like in the 90s, someone saying this, which is really interesting because everyone acts like the way stuff today is the first time people ever thought this way. But he thought it would be really compelling to explore a platonic male-female relationship.
Which, for Hollywood movies, that's definitely not the default.
Yeah, and I thought that was, like, super cool. His whole deal in playing this character, too, was having that kind of sounding board for Ripley because she went through the first movie with just a bunch of people who just were cannon fodder, really.
Pretty much, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of, like, naysayers and what you're crazy and what are you gonna and like
Game
I'm,
over.
Yeah I'm telling you, you know, and there's a lot of that in this movie too, but there's a lot more characters in this movie and they get rid of those, the naysayers and the
red
dead
shirts
weight. No. They get rid of, I mean, that's the neat thing about Aliens, why it's so good, you get to know all the characters
for sure.
So even the ones who are kind of, you're sitting there being like, well, this guy is annoying. And when they die, you're not just like, yay. You're just kind of like, oh, you know, but they kind of get taken down in order of competence.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. In a logical way.
Yeah.
I do like that framing, though, of like, that's Ripley's counterpoint. That's for sure. And
yeah.
Now that you say that, I do want that story because that is a harder story to write, is the, instead of the will they, won't they, you know, like tension, that's what you see all the time.
Right.
But the Reacher series, love it or hate it, they're exploring that relationship too, where it's just platonic, but there's a deep bond there.
Yeah.
And that's hard media to do. That would have been cool to see in the Aliens.
Right.
World.
It would.
Because Hicks is rad.
He's rad. Michael Biehn's great. And put him in that setting on a pirate ship where he's going to stick by everyone in the crew. He's always going to try and do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
He's tough as nails. You know, he takes alien acid to the face.
Would have no problem with sea creatures. Yes.
Yeah, no problem at all.
What's this, a kraken? Oh, okay. Does it have another head that comes out the mouth of its first head? Okay, we're fine.
Like, I guess earlier I said the word mansplaining because there is that scene where Hicks shows Ripley how to use the rifle.
Yeah.
And it's not done in a like, okay, lady, you know.
But he is still like he's head dude in charge. He is he knows he's corporal, but he is still Marine soldier.
Yeah, but I'm saying that specific scene, I think of it, he's like, okay, this is what you do. You did the but boop boop this that, you know.
Yeah.
I know you can do it.
Yeah. I'm showing my peer, yeah.
Yeah. That's what is I really like about that.
For sure.
And just when he rescues Ellen and Newt and freaking crashes through the
It's great.
It's a great character. I really like how, and it's funny, everyone tells me, you don't like horror movies, but you like these movies, and these movies are horror movies, because it does follow that trope of, like, the first one person survives.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one, that person survives again, but you get someone else who survives who's really messed up.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's him. And then the whole Bishop things. But, man, part of me picking him, too, is I want him around. I want him to exist again.
Yes.
I want Corporal Dwayne Hicks, the Marine, to exist again.
I love it.
They really did it dirty, man. Golly. I mean, people complain about what they did to Luke in the sequels, but that's got nothing on what they're just like, remember these characters you liked? They're all dead now. And not only did they kill them, they're dead, and then they like autopsy them. They like rip them open and then they incinerate them.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the writer of this was like, no, these characters are done.
Well, if it did, like, it is a torrid, I forget what it, you know, there's a lot of chaos behind the scenes in the production of that movie. Rewrites and reshoots. Yeah. It makes me think if like part of like the scenes in that were really just the creators like talking through the movie, be like, nah, we hate, like, we're tired of working on these characters dead.
Yeah. It's so strange you could have done it without having to kill those characters. It would have been just as trying for the four characters to land on some kind of prison planet or whatever.
That's it.
They were trying to do. No reason.
Right. Now, see, if you're going to
take them out cool, not just like, oh, yeah, he's just got squished when the ship crashed.
That's not cool. No,
and
that's
Newt's
not cool.
Gone, too. It's dumb.
Maybe we'll have to give it a second shot to see if there's other intent, but no, it can exist as dumb for now, because I agree.
Yeah. Some stuff is just dumb. Some stuff they legitimately have messed up on, and I think it's right to criticize.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, be positive, yes, but literally there is some stuff that is...
Learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, there's not too much to be taken from it. I mean, they clone her and it went off the rails.
It really did.
It really.
And continues to go off the rails and it's kind of turned around to be fun again, but, you know, who knows? Hey, here's just in my notes, I don't want this to go unsaid. Here's a reason for you to revisit Stargate Atlantis if you haven't seen it.
I haven't even seen it.
Okay, well then.
When was it on?
This was 2004. Yeah, 2004.
Okay.
And like 2008, I think. Only a couple years, five seasons.
Yeah, that was in my dark period.
Yep. But Jewel State shows up in later seasons.
Oh.
And for me, it was Robert Picardo, who plays the doctor, the hologram doctor on Voyager.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
He shows up in later seasons, too. And it's like, hey, doctor.
The guy who, they stole stuff from Red Dwarf. This is the first argument I have for that.
Yep.
And my second argument is, why not make ship full of capable holograms of people? Which I actually think would be a strangely compelling Star Trek series.
Oh, for sure.
If you had a ship with holograms of the best people you had,
yes,
then think of who would be on that ship.
Absolutely.
It would be cool. You'd have to, like, literally, it's almost like what we do here.
Yes.
You'd have to pick, like, the best engineer out of all of the Star Trek engineers, the best captain out of all the captains, the best first after. Yeah, it would be crazy. And then you'd have like this ship with holograms of them all.
It would be rad, but then the problem you'd have is, what is your enemy or what is the conflict in there? Because like those are all uber level people, yeah. You know, so you almost have to do like Black Mirror level, like weird storytelling where they're like, it's like philosophical enemies. Or,
yeah.
No. We're dealing with the abstract. We're fighting entropy. Because they're holograms. They can't go punching people. You can't have Monster of the Week.
Yeah.
That's all I'm saying. I love it, though.
Anyway, both our Marines are from space.
Yes. Mine is beefier, though.
Yes. But again, we want to see them in this setting.
Absolutely.
I'm basically casting a show with the Constitution with Nathan Fillion and Michael Biehn in his prime on it.
I'm basically just sneaking in Aquaman. It's fine.
Yeah.
Haha, take that.
It's our show.
It happened.
If you like it or don't like it, you can hit us up on social media.
Yeah, tell us why either way.
Yeah, you can go to at AssumingPod on any of the social medias, and you can let us know why we're wrong or why we're right.
Or Marines we didn't even think about. What are our blind spots?
Yeah, definitely. Let us know who your favorite Marines are, and if there are any famous Age of Sail Marines that we totally missed.
John Q. Marine. I already talked about him. The first Marine.
John Q. Marine. You can also send us a Gmail, assumingpositions@gmail.com.
Yar.com.
Hey, Mikey, how do you want them to format the Gmail?
Throw some Latin phrases in there. Semper Fi.
Oh, yeah.
We're Marines, so, you know, yeah. Seek Semper Gloria.
Yeah.
We're bordering nice. On all the Latin words I know.
I like it.
Yeah.
E tu brete. what else? Carpe diem.
This isn't proper Latin, but it's funny Latin. Siempre ubi sub ubi. What's always that? Wear underwear.
Oh, okay.
But not proper, I know.
And for Steve, carpe noctem.
Seize the evening.
Yes. if you guys like this crazy show we do here and would like to support us, podcasting is not free for us. You can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/assumingpod.
That's us.
That's our tip jar. Throw some tips in there. We want to thank you, Positrons, for listening. You are the best fans any podcast could ever have. We also want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our announcing, Not Scott Productions for the equipment, and Jazzar for the music. We will see you guys on the high seas.
Yar, look out. Tis be a monster on the horizon.
Oh, no,
that's just an island.
I hope it's not a xenomorph.
It's an island giving birth to baby island eggs. Oh no, it's hugging my face.